This is the Morning Conversation on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Looking back at the recently adjourned session of the Oregon State Legislature, State Senator Floyd Przanski with us. Floyd, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Carl.
So for you, what was maybe the top highlight of those 32 days in legislative sessions?
Well, there's a lot of stuff that took place. I think the farm worker overtime bill was one that a lot of people were faced looking at as something that equity is to ensuring people that are working hard, providing us food, are getting the pay they deserve. I think the other one that I would say is really important at this point is the $400 million for homelessness and housing, affordable housing. As you well know, there are still many Oregonians who are really having great difficulty in maintaining their housing or finding it.
And let's talk about that ag overtime bill. A lot from the ag side, though, not happy about that given the complexities of agriculture and just how things work during the seasons of planting. What are your thoughts about their reaction?
Well, it's interesting that, the ag community is actually split. There are a number of operations organizations, both very large and small, that were supportive, and then there were others that weren't. So that kind of tells me that they may have hit the mark. I was not working on that bill in my committees, but I was following it closely. Paul Hovey, state rep, was the lead point person on the House side. And then a woman named Kathleen Taylor, who's a senator out of Milwaukee, was the Senate point. And between the two of them and the discussions I had, I think they found that middle of the line where people are upset on one side and others are okay with it. So some of it's just going to have to be played out. It is a first, I think, when you look at most people probably didn't realize that people who work in ag of farm workers were not required to be paid overtime. And now we're saying that it's really appropriate for individuals who put in a hard day's work, multiple hours above and beyond 40, that they should, in fact, be compensated. There are tax credits that are set up for the ag industry to be able to offset as they transition over the next, I think it's next 6 years.
For your work in judiciary, what about the highlights there?
Well, the one bill that we had that went through was Transforming Justice. This is the one that basically was a rewrite of a bill that we had in 2021, House Bill 2002, which I made a determination it wasn't ready for prime time then. We did a work group that brought law enforcement as well as coalition members from various populations together. First time, I think, to have them all at the same table. They came up with a package, and we moved it forward. And I think it's going to be one that will, in fact, transform us and our criminal justice and police into a new era that's a positive one. So I'm real pleased that we have that. Of course, this is something that we'll continue to look at and make certain it has the intended results that we would want to see. And so I'm very pleased we got that across. The one that did not make it across was one that was we had the votes in the Senate. And this was for the non-unanimous verdicts. We do have individuals who are actually physically in custody in Department of Corrections who were convicted on less than a unanimous verdict. And many of us, including myself, felt that those who met certain criteria, being one in custody, literally in custody as compared to being on probation, and where the victims in those situations were not minors, that they should have the opportunity to present their case to a court to determine whether or not they should be retried based on the non-unanimous verdict. This is a case that I think we've talked about before that came out of the U.S. Supreme Court in 2020, and it basically did away with the unconstitutional statutes, or I should say not statutes, but the Constitution provisions that we have that allowed for non-unanimous verdicts except in murder cases.
It's an interesting situation because the High Court nationally made its ruling. Oregon has got to fall under that, but it's very complex when you look at going backwards and readdressing cases.
That's it is, and it's a balancing there. I mean, as we've talked about my situation, having a sister who's murdered back when I was in high school. I mean, there's a lot of things you got to take in consideration, victims' trauma as well. And that's why I think we came up with, and it's ironic, a Republican, Tim Knope, who's the majority or the leader for the Senate Republicans, put forward an amendment that I felt was fair and adequate. And it was one that basically said for cases that involved minors, that were the victims under age 18, that those cases would not be required to be retried. And, you know, it's kind of like on eggshells, because everyone has constitutional rights, and you would think, well, if anyone's constitutional rights are violated, maybe they should all be treated the same. But at the same time, I think you do, in fact, need to think about some of these cases have been so many years past as to when the trial occurred, and lawfully evidence was destroyed. And so how do you make those type of decisions? So there's a package that we had 17 out of the 18 Democrats on the Senate that were going to support it, and then it got hung up on the House side, I think, for political reasons.
So what about the session in general? You've got a constitutionally mandated 35 days. Do you feel like too much was put in terms of trying to get through a lot of different things?
Absolutely. This is one of those situations. This is the first time that the Senate has been allowed to put in two bills requests versus one. I think based on the results of what happened this time and the magnitude of how much was being introduced, I believe not only the Senate's going to go back to only one personal bill, but I believe the House is going to do the same. So come 2 years from now, I see a lot less member bills coming in, and I think there may be some adjustments on the number of committee bills and or any governor bills.
How about the difference between the original thought with these every year sessions being for budget fixes, technical adjustments, things like that, and the reality of the types of legislation that came through in this session?
Well, I think it's just is being compounded. I mean, this is something when we looked at it, what I remember was one, like you said, check the budgets and see how the revenues are coming in or outgoing expenses. Also look at stuff that couldn't wait until the next full session to address. And then that morphed to, well, if we had worked on it in the last long session and we're bringing it up 6 months later, we should be able to do that. And today you see brand new concepts that have never been addressed or looked at being introduced. And that's not unnormal. I mean, that's just one of those things at the sideboards. How do you actually keep someone from putting in an idea that they think they should have an opportunity to run? But the reality with only 35 days, as we talked before, you have to have something through that first committee within 8 days. I'm going to say no more than 10 for it to even have any attempt to move forward. So there's kind of a writing of it just based on the limitation of time. But it would be nice to, I think, limit the number of bills. And if we could actually, let's say, sectionalize it out from stuff that was introduced from the previous session and then stuff that needs to be addressed that can't wait for the next full session.
So what's ahead for you schedule-wise legislatively now that the short session is complete?
Well, we have the primary elections coming up in May, and because of that, they're moving our legislative days that normally are in May into, I believe, the first week of June, and then we'll have legislative days in September, and because of the going into the next long session, we'll have our third legislative days in December. In between now and then, of course, individual members will be preparing for those days and legislative days, as well as getting legislation ready for drafting for the long session.
Now, when you have the legislative days in December, does that include members whose terms are ending right after that, or are you able to pull in newly elected folks into that December legislative day period?
No, it's the same individuals that served, the ones that are actually duly elected, that their terms don't end until the very beginning of January when we have the new session start. So they are active, but one thing that we do is for the new members that are coming in that have not served before, they're given the opportunity to also introduce legislation to go forward for the long session. So that way they can participate through that process of getting stuff drafted and getting introduced for consideration when they are an actual member, either representative or a senator.
So, final thought, overall, how would you grade this recently adjourned session?
I would put probably a strong B. I mean, clearly, there's always the frustration of trying to get everyone to work together. You know, having the checks and balances that are currently in our Constitution where the minority party can require every bill to be word for word, read word for word before passage on the third reading. Those are things that we had to go through, and you can see how it played out up until the last, 72 hours of the session where you start seeing both sides saying, let's move forward, let's get the budgets done that we need to. Some of the bills we had, $100 million package that was put together by rural legislators that also went through in those last few days. And this is just funding projects. And fortunately, I was able, because of my district, to get a little additional money into some of the programs that were not going to get funded except through this special provision that was for rural legislators.
All right, State Senator Floyd Prezansky, thanks for being on this morning.
Kyle, thank you very much. Hope you have a wonderful day.
844, Morning Conversation on News Radio 1240, KQEN.